Gentlemen of Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, Bridgestone Arena, Preds, and Oilers tonight, 7 o'clock, right here on 102.5, the game. TD will join us for the TD Power Hour at 4 o'clock. So, Mike Lombardi, former NFL general manager, it feels like, has been in the pocket of Mike Vrabel for a while. Ian, would you say that that's probably fair?
I guess so.
He has been on the Titans. Last year, when everyone said that everything was great between Carthon and Vrabel, he kept saying, Tennessee, they got problems in the front office. They fired Vrabel. He went crazy. He has been very staunch kind of in this belief. And yet, that doesn't mean that he's wrong. Because if you remember, it was Mike Lombardi who was the first one that said the Titans were asking Kevin Byard to take a pay cut. Mike Lombardi is a former NFL general manager. He may not have been the best former NFL general manager, but it would seem to me that he probably has pretty strong contacts still in the NFL. So Mike Lombardi on his podcast, the GM Shuffle, was discussing Daniel Jones with his co-host when the conversation turned to Will Levis, and he said this.
Tennessee, Michael, Will Levis,
they
know the answer. No, I'm serious. Like, they know the answer. They have to. If they make the Jones decision to keep going with Levis, they're done. He gives the other team the ball consistently.
And he's terrible. He threw for, 23 attempts for 96 yards yesterday? I mean, if anybody else plays – if Mason Rudolph plays quarterback, they win that game.
I mean, yes.
See, but here's the whole thing. They made a choice, Patrick. This whole theme of the pod is choices, right? They chose Rand Carthon and Will Levis over Mike Vrabel. That's what your franchise did. Rand Carthon convinced the owner that Will Levis is the guy. He's not the guy at Ocean City High School, let alone the guy at Tennessee Titans. I mean, like, seriously, I can't even imagine that you would put your stock and faith. I mean, first of all, how the hell does he get a commercial? Like, don't you have to do something to get a commercial to be an endorser? Like, what has he done? I don't give a shit if he puts mayonnaise in his coffee or not. Like, are you kidding me? Like, this guy's terrible. Malik Willis, and I swear to God, lightning strike me dead. I would have never said that. Malik Willis played better in Green Bay than this guy's ever played.
He's not wrong. And I do ask this question, which is, again, he said, Rand Carthon convinced the owner that Will Levis was the guy and Mike Vrabel wasn't interested in that. Again, he said they chose Rand Carthon and Will Levis over Mike Vrabel. Now, I think it might be a little deeper than that, you know, with how Vrabel pissed off the owner. But again, I think the reality, we were told all last year there weren't any issues, and it clearly there are issues. Let's just say Lombardi's right. And I have nothing that would tell me that he's not. So he's the only one that's going to go on record and say it, so I'll give him that. If Lombardi's right, then I have to ask this question. How could you possibly let this current administration pick the next quarterback? Before last season, every single person in this town, including me, thought that Mike Vrabel was a great coach. Now, look, the coaching staff hires were underwhelming and the excuses were starting to become more obnoxious, and I get it. And plus, I think Vrabel is one of those coaches that has a shelf life. You know, it's like he couldn't play for Nick Saban for 10 years. That's why he was better in college. But there's no doubt that Mike Vrabel as a coach was better than what we've seen so far from the Sunshine Department. So again, if Lombardi is right, and they chose the GM and his group that haven't ever won anything, and won a power struggle over the former coach of the year because of a quarterback who stinks, you can't possibly let these people use next year's number one, number two draft pick, right? I mean, that's just, again, there's a lot of assets the team has that matter or don't matter or whatever, but there is nothing that is going to be more important than the number one draft pick that they have next year. I kept saying all offseason, I go, this is Will Levis insurance. If Will Levis stinks, you do not trade your first round draft pick because it may be number one or number two overall. And that might be your next trek for a quarterback. And even if it's not your next trek for a quarterback, the Detroit Lions had the number two pick, and they drafted the number one player in a draft that did not have good quarterbacks in it. And guess what? It ended up being Aiden Hutchinson. So that kind of pick can absolutely alter your franchise. We saw what John Robinson did when he traded that first pick in 2016. And it ended up being Jack Conklin and Derrick Henry and Jonnu Smith and Corey Davis. So if the owner was deciding what to do with her franchise, and Mike Lombardi's right, and she got talked into Rand Carthon over Mike Vrabel by Rand Carthon, who sold her that this quarterback is the guy, and she's sitting up in her box and she's watching Malik Willis absolutely slice and dice the Titans while Will Levis is throwing pick sixes, or she's sitting up in her box and she sees a Colts team with no Jonathan Taylor, with no DeForest Buckner, with no, if she's sitting in the box, she sees that, and she sees them throwing for 95 yards. Can she really let her get out of jail free card go to the same guys that got her in the mess in the first place? And I don't see how the answer can be yes. I mean, everybody tells me, like, you cannot fire this group after 2 years, which is hysterical to me because Mike Mularkey got fired after 2 years and he won a playoff game. So apparently our standards have changed. But I'm told, like, no, you cannot fire this group. Even though they're the ones, again, reportedly, that went to the owner and said, no, Will Levis is the guy. Let us find our coach, and we will find the coach that works best with Will Levis. And they found Coach Sunshine. It's a good thing that Calvin Ridley called out my play calling after the game. And I don't get it. Again, what are our standards here? John Robinson got to pick one quarterback, and it was Ryan Tannehill. And while you can argue that maybe Tom Brady would have been the better choice, and I would say that Tom Brady would have been the better choice than Ryan Tannehill, Ryan Tannehill did a lot more winning than Will Levis is ever going to do. So, again, I don't worry about this season. I don't. It's lost cause. The team stinks. The quarterback stinks. But the light at the end of the tunnel is that number one pick. That is the light. That is the hope, is that for whatever reason, that number one pick, if it's number one, if it's number two, if it's number three, that it can become a star player or multiple star players or a star quarterback. That's the hope. And you're telling me that the guys that are going to make the decision on this are the guys that, again, brought you this movie that is terrible right now, and we have to watch it every Sunday. Somebody explain to me why we should do that. Please, somebody out there tell me what the reasoning behind this is. And you know what my favorite thing is? This is what the stupid teams do, and this is what you're about to do. This is what the stupid teams do. The stupid teams will say, okay, well, we can't fire this guy even though he hasn't performed. We're going to fire the guys that do perform, but now we've got this guy that hasn't performed, but we can't fire him. It's not fair. We haven't let him have their quarterback even though they did draft the last quarterback, but that doesn't technically count, so we'll give him another one. So they're going to use the number two pick. And if that guy, again, he's not going to win as a rookie because for the most part, rookie quarterbacks don't win, although C.J. Stroud won and Jaden Daniels is winning. They're not going to win. And when they don't win, they're going to get fired. Because if this happens next year, then nobody will say, well, it's too early to fire them. So then everybody gets fired, and then a new GM and a new coach come in, and guess what they're left with? The other guy's quarterback. That doesn't matter. Like, what are we doing? But I guess everybody, Joe Rex wrote yesterday in Jerry vs. Joe, said if he had to pick between John Robinson or Rand Carthon's group, he would pick John Robinson. And then said we can't fire the group because, well, you know, it would just look bad. It's not about looking good or looking bad. It's about winning games. It's about getting players that can play and not giving yourself off-season of the year awards. But again, got yourself into this mix in the first place, and, you know, I said it when they fired John Robinson. I did. I said, I remember what it was like when the Titans didn't have a good GM. I remember what it was like when Mike Munchak and Ken Whisenhunt were the coaches. And I said, I don't want to go back to that. And the Titans, oh, you know, no, you don't understand. We'll have analytics now. And here we are in the middle of October, knowing that the season is over. And, again, I'm just praying that somebody who knows football will come in here to pick the next quarterback and not the people that are doing it now that, again, don't value right tackle. Mike Lombardi told you. And you can say all you want that you don't believe it, but, I mean, he was right the first time. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025, here on the program. And, by the way, there was something that I heard on the broadcast, the TV broadcast. I went searching for it all day today, and I could not find it. But this is how sad it has gotten in Sunshine Land for the Titans. And even the sunshine they're trying to pump to CBS is not, in my opinion, it's not what we're looking for here. We'll do it next. Stillman & Company, 102.5 The Game.
The only reason to keep playing him right now is because you think he has a chance to develop into your future at quarterback, and you want to see if he can play through his problems. That's the only reason to keep playing him. And the problem is that not only are you losing games because of him, because of bad turnovers, not just turnovers, but bad turnovers. But after a while, the team is going to look at the coaches in the front office, and they're going to say, well, what are we doing here then? If all we're doing is working through problems of a guy that hasn't shown that he can get through those problems because he keeps making the same mistakes over and over again, apparently, then why are we working like crazy in trying to win games and trying to do everything we can to pull this team out of the fire when you're not giving us a chance to pull this team out of the fire by playing the best guys at the best position for each position? Now, they know that when you have a young quarterback, meaning the locker room, when you have a young quarterback, there is some slack given to the coaches that guy's going to make some mistakes and we're going to work through those mistakes because of the bright future. But at this point, when you've lost all these games and you've got a couple tough ones on the way and the young quarterback keeps on making similar mistakes, then, you know, it creates a culture in the locker room that's very hard to overcome.
That was Trevor on the program on Tuesday basically saying, yeah, I mean, there's really not a whole lot of reason to keep playing the young quarterback because it's going to do you more harm than good. So I spent all day today trying to find the cut of when Aditi Kinkabale, the sideline reporter, I think I got her name right there, Ian.
Pretty close.
When Aditi on the sideline, you know, like the sideline reporter in the NFL is so useless. You know, it used to be that the person was on the sideline there to kind of follow someone back in the injury and say, you know, well, Bob, so-and-so rolled his ankle. They're working on it in the locker room. I remember when Jim Gray was outside the Chicago Bulls locker room during the NBA Finals when Scottie Pippen was getting his back worked on and kind of keeping us updated on whether or not Scottie was going to come back in the game. But as far as what they do now, they don't really do a lot. And so they just throw down to him, like, and we talked to him during the week, Aditi, and he said, but I kept looking for this cut because Aditi Kinkabale came out on the broadcast and she said, and Ian, I think you probably heard this too, that she said that she talked to Rand Carthon and Rand Carthon was preaching patience with Will Levis because of Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold.
Oh,
Did you hear that?
I think I may have heard that.
So I was looking for it all morning this morning trying to find it, and I could not find it, which means I'll find it next week when I don't need it. But, again, we all heard it. You know, hey, let's be patient because Baker Mayfield has turned out to be okay and Sam Darnold has turned out to be okay. What utter drivel. Let me just say this. First of all, I am the president of the Sammy D fan club. You know that. I liked that band before it was popular. But both Darnold and Mayfield have one big flaw, and that is that they are mid-level quarterbacks. I kept saying with Sam Darnold, Ian, did I not keep saying with Sam Darnold that I think, hey, he can be as good as Tua in Miami? I never said he can win the Super Bowl.
I think you just thought people were underestimating him.
Right. When everybody thought Jared Goff was the best quarterback in the league, I was like, he ain't that, guys. And then when everybody thought Jared Goff, Robbie, you know I'm talking to you, when everybody thought, and Buck, when everybody thought Jared Goff was awful, I was like, he's not that bad. And now people are starting to go the other way about it. And I'm like, again, Jared Goff's a mid-level quarterback. Jared Goff's the same as those guys. You get Jared Goff a good team, Jared Goff will win some games. Can Jared Goff win you the Super Bowl? I don't know. His defense held Tom Brady to 13 points. They scored three. They were only in the game because of one of the worst calls in the history of the NFL, and he still couldn't win the Super Bowl. So, again, I don't know. So that's the first thing. So hold on, we have to wait to see if this guy can end up being Baker Mayfield or Sam Darnold. You could just go sign Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold. They're going to be Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnolds that you can sign this year. Daniel Jones might be that guy. There's going to be a handful of guys who are not on their teams next year that, hey, maybe they were in some bad situations, and when you put them in good situations, they can play a little bit better. But again, we're talking about Super Bowl quarterbacks like C.J. Stroud and Jaden Daniels and those guys. Like in Washington, they don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl this year, but they think they're probably going to win a Super Bowl because they got Jaden Daniels. So the general manager's telling Aditi, well, you know, maybe he's Sam Darnold, so let's hope. What? No, before the year it was maybe he's Dan Marino, let's hope. Now it's maybe he's Sam Darnold? Talk about moving the goalposts. And then, not only that, like, let's not pretend like those guys had no success before their current spots. Baker Mayfield won a playoff game in Cleveland. And you see how stupid the owner is in Cleveland. So imagine the fact that he actually won a playoff game there. He was rookie of the year. And then Sam Darnold, and nobody knows this except for me and Gentry Estes because we're the only two that watched it, but Sam Darnold was 4-2 in the last six games when he took over as a starter in crap Carolina. And Carolina, that was the end of the 2022 season. They tried Baker out there. That didn't work. They tried P.J. Walker. That didn't work. Finally, the owner fired the coach, and he gave up on the season, and he got out of the business. And Sam Darnold went 4-2, and they had a shot at the playoffs at the end of the year. Do you know how many games in a year and, Ian, what would you say, a third into the season?
For this year?
Yeah, we're a third in.
Quarter, five, six third, games. Yeah, something like that.
What is it, 6 times 3? That is, what, 18?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're a third into the season.
Mm-hmm.
So a third into the season. So a season and a third. Sam Darnold in 6 games won 4 for Carolina. Carolina's won 3 games since. So what you're saying, Rand Carthon, when you tell Aditi Kinkabale that, hey, you know, let's be patient with this quarterback because Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield. What you're telling the fan base through Aditi is, let's be patient, and maybe this guy can be Ryan Tannehill. Again, maybe in can.
Well,
that's great.
Yeah.
But if I want to wait for Ryan Tannehill, why don't you just go get Ryan Tannehill?
The problem with those two comparisons are they're doing good for their not originally drafted team.
Right, and what was one of my big sticking points with Darnold? I mean, again, let's think about Mayfield and Darnold. Didn't work out for Mayfield in Cleveland. Do we think Cleveland's a good organization? Didn't work out for Darnold with the Jets. Do we think of the Jets as a well-run operation? Didn't work out for either of them in Carolina. So, again, when Rand's sitting there saying, like, hey, you know, these guys could be Sam Darnold or Baker Mayfield, I'm sitting here thinking, right, and you're Cleveland. You're the Jets. And that's what I said when they fired John Robinson at 7-5. Oh, no, you're the dumb teams. And no, Jared, Amy put her foot down. And I'm like, no, that's what stupid teams do. And so now it's like, well, maybe this guy, maybe he can be like this, and maybe he can. I mean, I hope. But again, you're asking for, going into the year, it wasn't like, hey, we've hired Brian Callahan to turn him into Sam Darnold. What a joke. What a joke. And again, it's like, well, let's move the goalposts now. Again, the hope was, let's turn him into Justin Herbert. Let's turn him into Dan Marino. Let's turn him into, you know, a big, strong, powerful arm quarterback that can push it down the field. And now it's, let's throw screen passes all the time. Put the ball 2 yards in front of the line of scrimmage. Check it down to the back. And let's hope one day, if we're lucky, if we hold hands in a circle, that he can be Sam Darnold. You can sign Sam Darnold. I don't understand, like, why they would think that's a good thing to say. 615-737-1025 on the program here, 615-737-1025. So there's a move the Titans made today. So you know what it is because they only made one move. And I did not care about it. And then I saw something that sent me over the edge. We will do that next here on Stillman and Company, 102.5 The Game.
Obviously, something happened between the time that, you know, he got here till now that he wasn't pleased about it. I'm sure it was the playing time. I'm sure, you know, he was told that he would get some playing time, that he would be in the rotation, not necessarily a starter, but he would be in the rotation. And he didn't find himself in the rotation for whatever reason. I have no idea. Was it because of injury? He wasn't playing, you know, early on, or he didn't practice, you know, during 2-a-days much. But they understood that when they brought him in. They knew what his practice regimen or his practice habits would be, just like they knew what D-Hop practice regimen and his practice habits would be. Again, there must have been some miscommunication between he and the Titans brass, or he and the head coach, or he and the defensive coordinator.
That was Derek talking about Jamal Adams today. If you have noticed, the Titans released Jamal Adams. Hate to say I told you so on that, but I mean, I told you so. But apparently it said in the bottom, and again, this is why the Titans are such liars. I mean, and TD's going to be with us at the top of the hour. And again, a reporter's job is to report. So according to the report that TD has at ESPN.com, quote, the primary issue from the Titans' point of view was a lack of practice, according to a team source. What? What happened to, like, maintenance days and we've got a program for everybody and Legarius Sneed's never going to practice, but it's okay. And that sounds like a lame-ass excuse from the Titans. The truth is Jamal Adams sucks. We told you that when they signed him. But Jared, for the league minimum, this is going to be a great high, low risk, high reward move. Okay. According to TD, the veteran defensive back said he's healthy and ready to help out the next team he joins. So Jamal Adams doesn't think he's hurt. Again, another type of, the Titans said one thing, the truth happens to probably more be like another thing, and it is what it is. But I don't care about that. Because again, I knew when they signed Jamal Adams, I knew that Jamal Adams was toast, and I wasn't worried about it. What I said was, you better not think you're done at safety. And they did go out and sign Quandre Diggs. So they released Jamal Adams at what, like 9 a.m. this morning? Didn't care about it. I actually laughed this morning when I heard Robbie and Rex Rhodes say the breaking news. And then they were like, well, I guess Jeffrey Simmons should probably go apologize to the media after crapping his pants all over the media saying, yeah, Jamal Adams kind of sucks at this point in his career. Thought that was kind of funny. But that was it. Then I saw John Glennon's tweet. Now, let me just say this. I don't watch the Chargers, so I don't know who's good on them and who's not. According to John Glennon, quote, the Titans signing of Jamal Adams was presumably one of the factors that led Elijah Molden to seek a fresh start. Elijah Molden was traded to the Chargers in exchange for a 2026 seventh-round pick. Woo! According to John Glennon, Molden has played in 5 games for the Chargers, starting 3, has 2 interceptions, 22 tackles, 2 pass breakups, and 1 fumble recovery. So the Titans got rid of Elijah Molden for less than a bag of footballs. Because they felt like, hey, we're not going to have any playing time because we've got Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams and Amani Hooker, so we're going to let you go. And then he goes to the Chargers and plays better than he has ever played for the Tennessee Titans. How many times is this going to happen? Where Malik Willis gets traded to the Green Bay Packers, and as soon as he goes to the Green Bay Packers, he is better than he ever was for the Tennessee Titans. What's next? They're going to trade PT, and he's going to go off and turn into Trent Williams? I mean, Elijah Molden has 22 tackles. Jamal Adams, I think, played 22 snaps. And so, I'm like, when it comes to the Titans, And it comes to somebody tweeted me and said, what do you think of the Jamal Adams release today? I mean, I don't care because it doesn't make a difference. But all I could say was, let Rand cook, baby! A seventh-round draft pick in 2026? That's it? And he goes off to the Chargers and is now starting and is good? And the reason you got rid of him was for a guy who was basically down to his last nail? And you said, well, you know, we're going to have a special. He didn't practice during the preseason. And it was, no, we got a maintenance program for him. And now you're like, oh, well, he didn't practice enough for us. Stop with the bull crap. But they can't do it. They can't do it. According to a source, a problem was that he didn't practice. You mean you thought you were getting a healthy Jamal Adams? You thought that you were getting the Jamal? We're like, yeah, Jamal Adams has played 9 games over the last 3 years or whatever it was. But he'll be okay with us. Well, you know, he doesn't really practice that much. Do you think? Like the guy that was last year said he was like, yeah, you know, I had to be in a wheelchair last year because I was so hurt. You thought he'd be able to practice every day? Of course you didn't. But now you're lying because you want to not look stupid. And that's the problem, is that they are in fact stupid. And it drives me crazy. It drives me crazy because every time something like this happens, we just shrug it off and say, oh, well, it is what it is. And then we never hold anybody accountable except for the guys that win. Mike Mularkey wins, we got to fire him. I mean, he can't do it. He's winning too much. Ian, give me the Snoop Dogg. You know, I cannot tell you. I've been thinking about this again. Because what I just don't like is I don't like the lying. That's the word I'm going to use. The lying that I get from some of these fans when they look at the last 2 years of the Titans and think that it's acceptable to see the performances and the personnel moves that we've seen, that the Sundays are okay. And I'm thinking, well, it wasn't okay when Mike Mularkey took over the worst team in the NFL and won a playoff game in year two, but we had to fire him. And John Robinson won 61% of his games, but we had to fire him. Could not go on a day longer as general manager, even though the trade deadline had passed and there was no draft and no free agency and really nothing for the GM to do, but we couldn't go on a day longer. We couldn't this, we couldn't. Mike Vrabel, again, and I thought it was time for Vrabel, but I thought it was time for a cleaning of the house, which they didn't do. But I thought it was time for that. But instead, you know, Vrabel, a coach who's got a winning record, former coach of the year, he's not good enough. But these guys that have never won anything and constantly make Andre Dillard move after Andre Dillard move, and now they're saying, well, Jamal Adams didn't practice enough, so it didn't work. And the guy they traded away because they signed Jamal Adams has 2 interceptions for the Chargers and is a starter, even though he never looked that good with the Titans, and we're supposed to say that's okay. And that goes back to what Snoop Dogg said in 2017. Think about that. This is you. And this was, again, in reference to Shannon Sharpe standing up for Brian Billick and talking about how the NFL won't give him a second opportunity, even though he was a Super Bowl coach. And listen to what Snoop Dogg had to say. And I am telling you, this is the Titans to a T.
Brian Billick, from 1999 to 2007, won 2 AFC North titles, won Super Bowl 35, and had 0 back-to-back losing seasons. He can't get a job. He can't even get an interview.
Are you talking about the coach that's on CBS to be doing this?
No. Brian Billick, the one that's on NFL Network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he used to coach.
He was.
Yeah, he, yeah. Well, he was coaching Baltimore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's a great coach.
He can't get a job. He can't even get an interview.
Probably because he didn't know how to win. They like coaches that like to lose. Like, I'm watching the NFL industry. They don't really respect coaches that win. When you lose, like, for example, Marvin Lewis. I hate to say it. You've been having a horrible season since you've been there. He should have been gone. Mm-hmm. But they keep reinstating him, giving him opportunities. And it's like, why did he keep getting opportunity and Billick's not getting opportunity? Yeah.
They like coaches who like to lose. Yeah, I mean, it's as simple as that. Mike Mularkey, not good enough. 2 years, sorry, you got to go. This, every move they make ends up being a bad move. Legarius Sneed can't cover Alec Pierce anymore. What happened? And by the way, somebody in the YouTube chat said Jared repeatedly said Molden sucked, but now it's a problem that he was traded. I did not like when they traded Molden. I did not like the idea of Molden starting for the Titans. But then when they added Quandre Diggs, I said, okay, this is good because Molden is kind of that hybrid backup. If you need him to play corner, you can play him at corner so that Trey Avery doesn't have to play corner. If you need him at safety, you can play him at safety. I'm fine with that. And when they trade him for a bag of footballs, they're like, you're not going to do that. But again, they know They know best, I guess. They always seem to know. They always seem to have all the answers, and then they never win any games. I don't understand how this works. Speaking of not winning games, the Predators need to start winning games. We'll do it next. Stillman and Company, 102.5 The Game.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're, you know, obviously we're moving things around. I thought Novi and Vange had their best game two nights ago, and I think with their hockey IQs and their offensive abilities, it could be a really good fit for Stammer. And maybe, you know, you move Marchie over, you know, just kind of moving around a little bit. And we talked about it's be a work in progress. I don't know how it's going to fit, where it's going to fit, but we're trying different things.
That was Andrew Burnett. So I saw the line combinations this morning at Morning Skate, Ian, and it sounds like the Predators are going back to Tommy Novak centering the second line.
That's correct.
So they went into they signed Steven Stamkos and Jonathan Marchessault, and they said Tommy Novak's going to get the first crack at centering that second line. Midway through the first game, Andrew Burnett didn't like what he saw. He moves Colton Sissons up there. Then he starts moving them all around the last couple of games, and now they've decided they tried Cole Smith up there. They decided we're going to try back. We're going to put Tommy Novak back up there in the top six. So all of that to me, that's fine. That's, you know, it's early in the season. You're trying to figure out what your best line combinations are. You're trying to figure out if you need somebody on the trade market. You're trying to figure that, whatever. Here's what's not okay. The fact that they're 0-3, and I almost feel like guaranteeing an Edmonton win tonight just because maybe that'll give the Predators some good juju, and that'll give us some hope that they could win the game, because other than that, I have no hope that the Predators are going to win a game at home against the Edmonton Oilers. Zero. Literally zero hope. I will be at the game tonight, by the way, but I have zero hope. But they need to start winning. You know, there's no way to sugarcoat it. You know, this is supposed to be a competitive team. And I don't mean competitive in regular season games. I mean competing for the cup. That's what this team is supposed to be. That's what they spent the money to be, is to be a cup contending team. They knew it when they spent the money. So when it comes to the Predators, and it comes to the fact that they put Wedgewood out there in game one because Saros was hurt, and he got daddied in that second period by the Dallas Stars and they couldn't come back, that's a problem. That in and of itself is not the end of the world. What is a problem is that, again, through three games, they don't have a win, and they're probably not going to win tonight because they're playing Edmonton, who they never beat at home. By the way, the Bruins come to town on Tuesday. The Bruins are really good. Like, and then with each game they lose, it becomes more and more of a thing. If they were 1-2 instead of 0-3, wouldn't probably even cross the radar. But they are 0-3. And I know it takes time to gel, and that's fine. But the reality with what this team needs to be is this team needs to be firmly in the playoffs at U.S. Thanksgiving, which is in a month and a half. They need to be firmly in the playoffs, and they need to be firmly in the playoffs for most of the season, because this is an older group, so they don't need to be playing catch-up. And if you want to talk about what they have to do in order to win tonight, or what they have to do in order to, you know, find sustained success, especially in the offensive end, or be able to control the defensive end, that's one thing. But I don't care about any of that. My thing is figure it out and win some games along the way, and then you can get back into tinkering with the lines and trying to figure out what the right D pairs are, and do you have to go get a second line center, which I think they're going to have to do this year, and that kind of stuff. But you cannot have a panic in October. I don't ever want to poo-poo games because, again, they're on our station and I watch them, and I'm going again tonight. And so I don't want to poo-poo games. But October, November hockey is not the same as January, February hockey. And it's certainly not the same as March or April hockey when you start to get real close to the playoffs. I kind of look at it like, hey, just get through these games and be in a position to compete, and then find yourself on the other side of it, you know, when you get into that start of the year, and now it's time to get ready to go. But you can't do that if you start the year 0-10. So tonight's a big one. And they have got to win. Because if they don't win now, it's 0-4. It's 0-4. They play Detroit on Saturday. It's, oh, my God, what are they going to do against Detroit? And then all of a sudden, you're 0-5. They got the Bruins, and then it goes to the Bruins. You see what I'm saying? Again, I think these things are all going to even out. I think the Predators are probably going to lose tonight because it's Edmonton. But then they'll win on Saturday, and then they'll win on Tuesday, and then they'll be 2-5, and then it'll be fine. They'll figure it out. But where we sit right now, I would say it is concerning because – There's a lot of pressure on this team. There's a lot of pressure, and there should be. And so, again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, oh, this has to happen or this doesn't, but they need to get themselves out of this. Boy, a win tonight would be so nice. A win tonight would be so relaxing. That's, I think, the right word to use. A win tonight for the Predators would be so relaxing, because what it would mean is, hey, they're not going to be 0-5, they're not going to be 0-6, they're not going to be, and then you can get back to that whole trying to gel and figuring out what your line combination should be and figuring out, you know, who should play where and whatnot. By the way, I do think it is inevitable, and I heard Elliot Friedman talking about this on the midday show today. Because they asked him, you know, we talked to Barry Trotz, and we keep saying, so what's the deal with this Johansson money? Because the Predators have a boatload of draft picks. They just don't have a lot of cap space. And so if the Predators were to get an extra $4 million in cap space because of the Johansson grievance, then that would be very beneficial come January, February, when they're looking to acquire that second-line center. They've got all those second-round draft choices that they could dangle in front of somebody in order to get a player. They've got three first-round draft choices this year to dangle for a player or something like that. So they could make that move given the cap situation. And Elliott said that I guess there are expedited grievances in the league, and there is not an expedited grievance being held for Johansson, so that's probably going to take some time. And so for me, again, I think they need to win. Ian, talk for a second because I've got to handle this little tiny thing right here so we can get TD into the arena
on time. Good deal. Yeah, I mean, as far as tonight goes for the Preds and Oilers, it will be interesting to see, you know, Draisaitl is technically usually a Preds killer. So we'll have to see. And I am actually think they should consider breaking up the Stamkos Marchessault pairing. Every game so far, they've kept Stamkos and Marchessault on the same line. I think that's not a bad idea. You don't necessarily want two new players on the same line trying to figure out the system together. It almost seems like it would be better off if you have two players on the same line that are familiar with how Brunette wants to play, and then you kind of sprinkle in one or two of the new guys to help supplement. I kind of think Evangelista, Novak, Stamkos is a good start, personally.
So,
and I would have considered if you wanted to move Stamkos to the center like they did last game,
which I don't like, by the way.
If you're going to do that and move Cole Smith up there, just move Evangelista up there with them. Evangelista with Stamkos and Marchessault, I would be okay with that. But I also think you should probably break up Stamkos and Marchessault at first, see if they can get familiar and just get a feel for roles on the team. You know, there's a lot of deferring who's going to take the shot, who's going to pass. There's still a lot of figuring that stuff kind of out with Stamkos and who wants to be the shooter, who wants to be the passer. You know, in Tampa, they had that figured out pretty good with the Kucherov-Stamkos situation. And that's just going to be a work in progress for now.
Ian, well done with that great analysis.
Sure, no problem.
One texter says, I have more faith in the Titans winning more than three games for the rest of the year than I do in the Predators being Edmonton. I agree. It's not looking good, but it is reality. Okay, TD is going to join us next here on the program, 615-737-1025. And I will have to go put out a small little fire here. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.